Our first session for this afternoon is a symposium that will take 90 minutes. There will be four brethren participating. First will be Brother Jim Parkinson, and he will speak on the prophetic implications in the land of Israel. Brother Jerry Leslie will follow with the civil governments. Brother David Rice with the nominal systems. And then Brother Homer Montague will conclude with the true church. We will not interrupt them by coming up to the platform in between each speaker. We will trust that they will be prompt in presenting their subject and finishing on time, not to infringe upon the other brethren. And in that way, we hope to give them the maximum amount of time. And so for now, we will turn over the platform to our brother Jim Parkinson, who will address us on the spirit, on the subject of Israel.
Thank you, Brother Ted. The brethren at San Gabriel Valley class, a bit east of Los Angeles, send their warm Christian love to you. And, of course, we, the family, are glad to bring ours firsthand. Our subject this morning is on prophecies concerning Israel. And, needless to say, we won't go through all of them today. So let's start with Jeremiah chapter 16, verses 14 to 16. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that it shall no more be said, as the Lord liveth, that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but as the Lord liveth, that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north, and from all the countries whither he had driven them. And I will bring them again into this land, the land that I gave unto their fathers. Behold, I will send for many fishers, saith the Lord, and they shall fish them up. And afterward I will send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and from out of the clefts of the rocks. For behold, mine eyes are upon all their ways. They are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity concealed from mine eyes. And first I will recompense their iniquity and their sin double. Mishnah here. Because they have polluted my land with the carcasses of their detestable things and have filled mine inheritance with their abomination. But then we get down to the end of the chapter, and it draws a conclusion. Therefore, behold, I will cause them to know, this once will I cause them to know my hand and my might, and they shall know that my name is the Lord, or my name is Jehovah. In the verse 14, it makes a contrast between the Lord liveth, that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, and the Lord liveth, that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the countries whither he hath driven them. And that's now. How many Jews came out of Egypt? 1 says 1 million, and somebody else says? One says 3 million, one says 2 million. Certainly something on that order, because there was 600,000 men plus the women and the children. Let's pick the median for now, a couple of million. What's happening today is to dwarf what happened back there. It's to say 2 million coming out of Egypt is nothing compared with what is happening today in the sight of you and me and everybody else. What's the Jewish population of Israel today? 5 million. Okay, let's settle for 5 million. We're certainly getting there, out of a world population of somewhere on the order of 15 million. Hey, we're about a third of the way already. It is beginning to dwarf the size of the Exodus. Now, trick question. How many Jews stayed behind in Egypt? I think that's right. None. Why? Because the Egyptians have been scared to let them. So, do we think that eventually, whether before or after the final overthrow of this present evil world, that the Jews will all call Israel home? Now, that doesn't mean they can't have ambassadors in other nations, I don't suppose. How will this transpire? Well, that we'll try to see, but we don't have all the answers. And if I think I do, the Lord will show me differently. But what has been happening and what remains to happen today respecting the regathering of Israel to their homeland? We need go back only to the 1870s to find a time when it still looked hopeless. Now it's true. Many British prophetic writers were prophesying the return of the Jews to the homeland of Israel. May be surprising, but in a relatively recent publication, Isaac Newton was one of them back in the 1600s. But there was a lot of activity in writing about it among Protestant expositors in England and Scotland in the last century, before there was any shred of evidence. Now, if we look back in archaeology, we can find the evidences that would indicate that Jacob died in B.C. 1813. And then there was a period of favor when Israel, at the death of Jacob, emerged as a 12-tribe nation. For 1845 years, they experienced a favor in the hands of the Lord until they moved for the crucifixion of Christ in A.D. 33. But I will recompense you double for all your sins. Twice as much? Well, not in this case. Sometimes the word is kephal, sometimes it is mishnah. And a kephal is like a fold, like you fold one hand against the other. You are your twin brother's double. One hand is the double of the other. And so, if you take 1845 and add it to A.D. 33, what do you come up with, those who are arithmetically minded? Close. That's 1878. And from a state of hopelessness, Turkey, who ruled the land of Palestine at that time, got in a war with Russia in 1877. And the Russians and the Turks were doing each other in. Finally, they agreed to an arbitrated settlement by the nations of Europe. England was among them. They had been a friend of Turkey. The French were among them. They had not been a friend of Turkey. So there were nations of both sides, and just at that time, the Prime Minister of England was Lord Beaconsfield, a Jew. The settlement was that Turkey, which had banned Jewish immigration, forbidden anybody to get a visa as a Jew to go to Palestine for more than 3 weeks and then out of the country. And they gave in on this point that anyone now could go and buy an own land in Palestine. The Jews were not slow to take advantage of it. The first new Jewish community, Door of Hope, Petah Tikva, was reestablished the same year, 1878. The beginning of the return of Israel, right on time. Now then, the harvest period is divided up into several periods of time. We look at Jericho. The gospel age is covered by 7 periods of time, 7 days. But on the last day, and we got a lot of last day prophecies, don't we? It too was divided up into 7 periods of time as they marched 7 times around the city on the last day. In Egypt, we have the 7 last plagues before we have the deliverance of the church of the firstborn and the destruction of the heirs of Satan's kingdom. So, let's look and see what has been happening since the Jews first got their permission to begin going back. We come to World War I. A lot of destruction throughout all of Europe and some of the rest of the world, too. But there was something constructive for the Jew. In the politics of World War I, the Balfour Declaration was issued, setting aside Palestine, not just for anyone who wants to go and buy land there, but specifically as a Jewish homeland. And after that, well, of course, everybody was happy about that who was a Jew, I'm sure. Except a lot were saying, well, it's nice to have a homeland, but who needs it? I got plenty here. Baron Rothschild said, I'm very happy they have a homeland. And when they become a nation, I will be most happy to be the ambassador in Paris. What is our next major world event? The Depression. That wiped out Jews as well as Gentiles. Now what's holding them back? And indeed, by 1929, 1% of world Jewry had returned to Palestine. But now, I will send for fishers, and they will fish them up. And if they will not come, I will send for many hunters. Enter the Depression. Enter Adolf Hitler. By 1939, 3% of the Jews had returned to Israel. Then World War II. And World War II all but depopulated Central Europe of its Jewish population to the benefit of one nation, Israel. Israel became a nation in 19... What was it? That's right. By 1949, 10% of world Jewry had returned. And by 1969, it was up to 15%. And today, we've got about a third back. You say, yeah, but that leaves two-thirds. How about the places they've come from? Well, who is it that they encourage to go back? The old ones who are retired, or the young ones who can build up the land? Some years ago, I was reading that on the Malabar coast of India, there used to be a population of 80,000 Jews. And at that time, the Jewish population was 100. Of the 100, only a single couple of childbearing age. The Jews have been wise in repopulating Palestine primarily with those who had the energies and strengths to rebuild the country. The Jewish future is there. It is in prophecy. It is happening before your eyes and mine. What remains? Well, by the end of World War II, there were not so many Jews left in Central Europe. Some had fled to Eastern Europe, more had fled to the West, and some had gotten into Palestine. Perhaps at that point, to the chagrin of the British government, but then they didn't endure, did they? They lost control in 1948. Then we had an East versus West struggle, in which Zionism was vilified in the Soviet disunion. Well, it was still a union at that time. And as a result today, now that the pot is no longer under pressure, the Jews are returning from Russia. But still, half of the world's non-Israeli Jews are in one place, North America, the U.S. and Canada. Those of you who live in New York, nowhere the largest single Jewish population is outside Israel. What will happen to cause the Jews from here to go back? After all, we've seen World War, Depression, World War, an East versus West conflict that came close to bankrupting the world. Well, perhaps here it could be another depression. Brother John, do you know of any anti-Israel, anti-Jewish sentiment in this country? Brother Homer? I've experienced it. Most of us have, in one place or another. True, there's both pro and con, but we know who is the God of this world. We can reasonably expect that yet one more world event will happen that will lead to the deliverance of the Jews from the West back to the land of Israel. And after that, well now, after that we get to Ezekiel chapters 37 through 39. And it's safe to say we won't have a chance to go through all of the nations that are there. But in Ezekiel 37, we're given a progression of things to happen in the restoration of Israel. We have the bones coming together, the dried bones, and then sinews come upon them, and flesh upon the sinews, and skin over the flesh, and then the spirit. Ezekiel is told to first prophesy of the restoration of the bones. And then the bones come up, would suggest that's people going back to Israel. But then in the 20s and 30s, there were a lot of attacks by Arabs, the majority of whom had been sent there by other Arab countries to keep the Jews from taking over. The majority of Palestinians or other Arabs in Israel today cannot trace their ancestry back four or five generations even, let alone hundreds of years. So it was necessary for the Jews to develop a military skill and ability. The sinews came upon the bones. But then there came the flesh, an economy. And finally, the skin covering the flesh, well-defined boundaries, as in 1948, Israel became a self-governing nation. And then it says, Son of Man, prophesy again. That would be appropriate to us today, to prophesy that, well, we've gotten this far and Israel is a nation. In time to come, the Lord's Spirit will be poured forth on Israel. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, each of the ancient worthies are to be resurrected. And with a government like this, how can a nation miss? Now, in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 9, we have two groups, two armed camps. We have Gog as the head of Magog, and close allies in Meshech and Tubal, and then other allies in Persia, Cush, Put, Gomer, and all his bands, and Togarma. Don't have time to identify all of those. We'll pick a couple of others that we usually don't talk about so much today. Meshech and Tubal. Meshech would be in what we'd call eastern Turkey, northeastern Turkey, what was southern Caucasian, south Caucasian territory of Armenia, even a little bit of northwestern Iran. And in eastern Turkey, right about there, to the extent that my hand can be steady enough to show it, we have a city that was called Caesarea Mazaka, or the Caesarea of Meshech. And today it just has the first half of that name, Kayseri, Turkey. It was the source of the copper mines. And the ancient center of metallurgy, that's what we call Georgia in the South Caucasus Mountains. The Georgians don't call themselves Georgians or even Grugians, but Kartvelians from Kara Tubal. The rocks or mountains of Tubal, from the Georgian word tbili, meaning warm, because the capital is in an area of warm springs. Anybody remember what the capital of Georgia is? That's right, Tbilisi, from Tubal, still. So they are associated more closely with Russia than are the others. And we have Togarma, Thurgama in the Septuagint. We call them Turks in our language today. And they went from this area east into an area that we call Turkestan today. And then they came back to where they came from, and that's how the country became known as Turkey. These are among the Allied troops then. So we have, on one side, we have Russia. This would be Magog, the area south of on the north half of the Caspian Sea, including the great river valleys, like including Moscow, for example, and then the Soviet Far East as well. The Mongols are also among the descendants of them, even as far east as the Yakut tribe and the Alaskans. I'm being given the high sign. Thank you. I needed that. So Kush, primarily Black Africa. Put, the Berbers of North Africa, outside of Egypt. And then we have Gomer, the Germanic tribes. That's quite an alliance there, from Russia to at least nearly South Africa, and perhaps including South Africa now that they've taken it away from Ofer. It's one solid alliance except for an area in between, Israel and its immediate neighbors. And that's the alliance that we are watching forming today. We're partway through. What does that mean to us? We should offer comfort to Israel. And for Israel, we understand and we can tell people that its restoration is the Lord's concrete pledge that He will indeed establish His kingdom. The whole world may be going to pot, but one thing is being constructed by every major world event that has happened since the Lord's return. World opinion may go against Israel. Ours should not. The rapidity with which we see the alliance forming may suggest to us how short-term or how intermediate-term we should be thinking in terms of our public witness work, but we should be thinking of the public witness work as well as the renewing of our characters. And let's keep in mind that that is still not our primary mission, not the teaching of the time of trouble, but what comes after the kingdom.